from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Oakland teachers' strike is now in its fourth day, and yesterday, State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Thurman intervened in negotiations trying to help the two sides reach common ground. In this half hour, we're going to talk about the strike, why California schools are chronically underfunded, and what can be done about it. Louis Friedberg's here with us in studio. He's executive director of EdSource. They're an independent, not-for-profit research and reporting organization. Welcome, Louis.
Good to be here.
Good to have you. I can't believe you've been at this post of yours now for 7 years.
I know. Hard to believe.
Well, we're also going to get an update right away on the strike and the negotiations with Vanessa Roncagno, education reporter for the California Report. Vanessa, you're at Oakland Tech.
I am.
What are you seeing?
Well, it's pretty windy. It's pretty cold out here, but there are folks out in force in ponchos with their signs. You can probably hear them behind me.
I can, and it's what we call good ambient sound in the broadcast business. But I'm interested also in finding out if you can update us on the strike. Tony Thurman, as I said in the introduction, was talking and trying to bring some common ground. What do we know about that?
That's right. As you will recall, the state teachers union spent many millions of dollars supporting his candidacy, and at their behest, at the local union's behest, he is out here trying to mediate this thing. He was there all day yesterday. They're back at it today, and we're told he is here again. We're not hearing a lot about what's happening behind closed doors, but publicly, the district is basically reiterating its position that the union's 12% salary demand is just financially untenable for them. But the union is seemingly doubling down on their position. They said, quote, there are ways that money can be found. So we'll see what happens. We're expecting another update this evening. Outside of negotiations, we're seeing some support from other local teachers union. Berkeley teachers were out rallying in front of some Berkeley schools this morning. Yesterday, San Francisco teachers from Mission High School held a sick out, and they're calling for other teachers to join them tomorrow. And then in the union's plans, there's a march planned for 11:30 from Elmhurst Community Prep. This is the middle school in Deep East Oakland. They're going to march from there to Roots Academy, Roots International Academy, which is slated for closure. The school board voted to close it, and the union is very upset about that, as you know, and they are pushing to actually bargain around closures, which the district has said it does not want to do.
We should also mention there are teachers elsewhere that are raising funds for Oakland teachers. How well organized are the parents and student support, as you see it, Vanessa?
They've been quite organized. You know, there are a lot of solidarity schools that I think have been pretty well attended. Here at Tech, parents have been showing up with coffee and snacks for teachers every morning and throughout the day. There's really been a lot of support. And as you know, the union's estimate is that about 3% of students, I believe it is, are showing up to school. We don't have official numbers from the district, and they've said that they're planning to put those out tomorrow.
Vanessa, appreciate very much you being with us. Thank you. Thank you for your good work.
Thank you.
So Vanessa Roncagno, education reporter for the California Report. Now we're going to talk to Louis Friedberg, who, as I said, is executive director of EdSource and is here with us in studio. Louis, the money's not there, or the money is there, or where is the money?
Well, I'll tell you one thing about the strike. There's less money now than there was a few days ago. We've actually crunched some numbers, or actually School Services of California, a major consulting firm. And it looks like the district is losing about $1 million a day.
Because
of the strike.
Well, certainly losing money in terms of just students being absent.
That's correct. I mean, basically, the district gets about $2 million a day for students in attendance. And, of course, if they're not there, they don't get that money. Now, the district is saving about $1 million from not having to pay teachers. But so they're out $1 million. So there's less money now to bargain with.
This is what's called the ADA, the Average Daily Attendance. But there's a lot of confusion about money. The funding system, for example, just as an example of what we're talking about, Danville and San Ramon get a lot more money because their students are in place. And one can argue that the students in Oakland are much more in need where money is concerned. I mean, just in general, in terms of services, let alone the losses that you're talking about just because of the strike. But there's also a lot of confusion about the budget and where the money actually is or isn't.
Well, just to clarify, more affluent districts get more money per students in attendance. That's how schools get
specifically
funded.
Specifically what I meant, because we were talking about ADA. Yeah.
But actually, Oakland gets about $14,500, the current expense of education, which I think is about the best kind of estimate out there, about $14,500 per kid to spend every year. It's actually significantly higher than the state average.
Yeah, but let's compare to other states. We get about, for per student, half of what New York students get.
Well, this is where California has been lagging, and this has been going on for several decades, rooted in Prop 13. And the spending has gone up in recent years, but we are still lagging behind.
And what about charter schools? I mean, you know, the union has been bringing this up repeatedly because only 54% of Oakland kids are in public schools. Could go, in fact, down from that number. And charter schools are certainly a big part of this revenue problem.
One part of the revenue problem, I would say. I mean, you know, there's other big parts. There's huge pensions that the school district has to pay. The problem with charter schools is that it's kind of the overhead costs that the districts are stuck with. That when the kids leave, let's say you've got one or two kids in a classroom going to a charter school, you can't. It's not like you can suddenly lay off a teacher. You still have a teacher for that classroom, and you still have to pay for the overhead costs and so on. So the fixed costs, they call them the legacy costs, for districts are just much higher when you have, per kid, when you have so many kids going to charter schools.
What about the state forgiving the debt? It happened once before.
I think that's going to be a really tough call. If they forgive Oakland, then they're going to have to forgive other states,
LA,
other districts.
Too, they'd have to forgive, right?
And I think that's, you know, that's where the issue, that's where the problem right now is that I think one thing that has come out of the strike, the LA strike and the Oakland strike, is that it's really put on the agenda that California is lagging behind other states.
And, 41st, I think.
And
it is.
That's one measure. That's we could spend an hour discussing the various measures. But one measure, that was the one the governor cited. But actually, that was based on 2015-16 figures. So California has been putting more money into its schools. Under Jerry Brown, the economy has improved. California gets a certain percentage of the state budget based on Prop 98, which voters passed in 1988.
So as you figure it, has it gone from 41st to what, maybe? Or,
you know, this is the, and Edsos wrote, we did a whole analysis. There's various, you know, one estimate puts it at 22nd, another one puts it at 35th, another puts it at 41st, because one of the things you also have to take into account is the cost of living and the wage, what you have to pay people in California. So one
state, why we have such a high attrition rate as far as teachers. I mean, because of the cost of living, not only in Oakland, but in San Francisco,
exactly,
and throughout the Bay Area.
But when you account for the cost of living, obviously a dollar in California doesn't go as far as it goes in Nebraska. So to compare California's rate with many other states without taking into account the cost of living and isn't a fair comparison. So when you take that into account, it really puts California way down, even though there has been some improvement.
Well, there is a national movement now. I mean, you know, there's a good deal of talk about it. It's like labor has never seen this kind of movement in quite a number of years in terms of teachers going out on strike all across the nation. I mean, West Virginia, obviously, here in California, in Oklahoma. And the reality of this is that the economy is humming, and people are deciding, do we go to a rainy day fund or do we give our teachers more money? I mean, it often comes down to that, doesn't it?
Well, it does. You know, I think we do have a problem in the Bay Area and in Los Angeles, because even if the teachers' union gets the 12% pay increase that they are asking for, and I think that's going to be very tough for them to get, looks like they're going to get pretty close. And question whether the district can afford that. But that 12% isn't going to allow teachers to buy houses in the Bay Area. I mean, you're starting from a pretty low base. So we kind of have an untenable situation where sort of the base salaries for teachers is so low, we've basically underpaid teachers. historically in the United States. And how are people going to afford to and I think that's part of what's driving the strike situation, both here in LA, just frustration that the teachers, first of all, don't trust the figures on the district. And secondly, they have a legitimate case to make that they need to make a living wage.
Well, you mentioned Prop 13 before, and there is probably going to be a ballot initiative 2020 to reform Prop 13. But even if that passes, there would be more money for the public schools, obviously. And nevertheless, it would take a couple of years before it actually got into the swim, right?
That's correct. I mean, one of the things that is promising, I mean, potentially help is on the way. There will be this ballot initiative 2020, the split roll, Prop 13, which will raise a few billion dollars, $4 billion for the schools. If that passes, it's going to be a heavy lift to get it past the voters. But that is on the ballot. That thing qualified 2 years ahead of time. It hasn't happened before. But the state is going to have to look at other things. And that's the question, whether they will. You may recall, for example, Michael, the vehicle license fee that was in place for 50 years. Governor Schwarzenegger did away with that. Well, should the state consider reimposing that vehicle license fee?
And there are questions about parcel taxes and property taxes. I mean, the whole revenue question looms over this whole strike. But let me do this. Let me invite you, our listeners, to join. We've got Louis Friedberg in studio with us, Executive Director Ed Source. And you may have questions about the strike and about some of what we're talking about here. And if you do, or if you have some comments about and thoughts about, we'd like to hear from you. Our toll-free number is available, and you can join us now at that number. It's 866-733-6786. Please feel free to be part of the program. Let us know your thoughts and let us know what's on your mind, questions you have about the Oakland teachers' strike entering its fourth day. You can also join us by emailing us forum@kqed.org or going to our website and posting questions or comments there at kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. And you can also, of course, go to our Facebook page. You know, there's been a lot of talk about mismanagement in the Oakland schools and the need for more reforms. But you wrote about, and I think this is important for people to realize, the reform that was involved with breaking up into small schools, and there was some considerable amount of revenue behind this from the Gates Foundation. Failure, basically.
Well, what happened was that they broke up some of these iconic schools in Oakland, Fremont High School, Castlemont High School, McClymonds High School, and they had these small schools, which it seems like a good idea. But the problem is that some of these small schools didn't really work. And number two, it increased the overhead cost because you had to have principals and so on for each one of these schools. And there was an outflow of kids from those schools. And so as a result, in some of these big high schools right now, and this is kind of a ripple effect of going over many years, there are fewer kids in those schools. And you can trace some of this directly to the small schools experiment. And then, of course, in midstream, the Gates Foundation that was funding this pulled out. Bill Gates himself decided, wasn't yielding the results that they would hope for. And so the whole thing collapsed.
It's also Bill Gates and, some other folks who have $1 billion maybe at their disposal who have been behind the charter movement.
Well, that's true. That's true. And, you know, I think the issues here, when the charter law in California first started, there was a limit. There were supposed to be 100 charter schools in the whole state, maximum of 10 per district. LA was given a special dispensation, 20. And after a few years, they lifted the cap. So you could actually add 100 charter schools every year. So California now has a cap of 2,450 charter schools. There's about 1,300 charter schools. So in effect, there is no cap. But the original intent wasn't that you would have so many charter schools. And I think that's one of the things that's created this kind of backlash against charter schools. The charter school movement became very aggressive. And there was they launched something called March to a Million to have 1 million kids enrolled in charter schools. And the teachers' unions, which had been kind of, they coexisted with charter schools. I think when the charter school movement became so ambitious to enroll so many kids, I think that's what's created a lot of the conflicts and the tensions right now.
Let's go to you, our callers, and let's begin, Matt, with you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey. Good morning, Michael. So my wife is a first grade teacher in East Palo Alto, and her school is actually considered for closure to be replaced by a charter school. And just from the little bit I know about, you know, the culture of school districts and how they're run, it's pretty ridiculous how blatant the inequality is between the low-income schools and the higher-income schools, especially in, you know, in the Bay Area, where you're, you know, a mile away from Facebook and you're across the bridge from Palo Alto, and you just see the situations that just being a mile away from each other puts the students in, and it's really unfair. I think the funding for schools really needs to be relooked at. It needs to be a high priority if we're going to fix the inequality, the income inequality in the area. And that's all I have to say.
All right. I thank you for that statement. Thank you for joining us, Matt. It's Matt from San Jose, and our next caller is Michelle from Campbell. Morning, Michelle.
Good morning. And I heard that teachers want a living wage, but I would like to run this by you instead. Our teachers deserve a thriving wage. A chaos wage is when one that's before the legal, wage that we can give people. And then there's a live wage, which is when you're at that living wage, just above the, I can't remember the term right now. And then there's coasting. Hello?
Yeah, we're hearing you. Go ahead.
Oh, then there's like coasting, when you can afford your rent and save a little. And then thriving is when you can actually save enough and actually buy a home in California with all the housing pressures here between the influx of people and the growing income inequality. So I think that our teachers are undervalued, and they delivered a coasting or thriving wage, not just a living wage.
Yeah, thank you for that, Michelle. I think the fact of the matter is, Lewis, it used to be that somebody could pursue what I like to think of as a noble profession of teaching and actually afford to buy a home. And now, especially in metropolitan areas, I mean, specifically in Oakland, San Francisco, San Jose area, it's almost not possible.
Well, and you compound this with we have a teacher shortage. And we want to recruit teachers, so they're coming in at the lowest salary level. And if you're talking about getting in at $40,000, $45,000, some districts I think it might even be under that. But in the Bay Area, if you've got to pay $2,000, $3,000 for rent for a modest place to live, you can see the numbers don't add up.
In Oakland, it's over 60% of actually teacher pay goes to regular salary for teachers.
And it would have to be higher rent. Just if you're relying on one income for a beginning teacher. So this is going to have to be addressed. But, you know, the fact is that...
Addressed how?
Well, I think the state is going to have to look at some of these other things. You know, the vehicle license fee, this tax on oil extraction. California is the only state that doesn't impose that tax. That would raise about $2 billion. So there are things that are going to be very difficult to do. Governor Newsom is going to have to look at this. And of course, one of the things he's been promoting his 0-5 agenda, universal preschool, universal kindergarten, full day kindergarten. So that's going to cost a lot of money.
And he's also talking, of course, about single payer and eventually and universal health care in California and so forth. What about the fact-finding commission? What do we learn from that in terms of money?
Well, the fact-finding commission, that was the report that came out just right before the strike was called. And
it's pretty confusing, really.
Well,
I mean, in terms of where the money is or isn't again.
It basically says that there isn't the money. This is what this, and it was written by Najib Khoury, he's one of the leading labor arbitrators in the state. And he was basically saying that this district doesn't have the money to pay the 12% increase, for example. And
but like you're suggesting, there were a lot of things in there that said the district could get the money with state help and so forth.
Well, down the road, what happened in Los Angeles, they reached a settlement, but the third year is not funded. They're talking about a $500 million deficit in Los Angeles in the third year. And so basically what we have right now is it's kind of on a wing and a prayer. They got the first 2 years, and then we're going to have to see what happens in the third year. And it may be something like that also happens in Oakland, that you can see we can get through just the next year or two, but then longer term, what's going to happen?
More of your calls. Leanne, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. To follow on with the revenue issue for education in California, I'd like to talk a little bit. I'm a recent transplant from Florida, and we have something called the Florida Homestead Tax Exemption. And what it does is it basically is Prop 13, but it's only for people that are residents in their house. So it's not for renters, it's not for corporations and those sorts of things. And I'm kind of confused about the Prop 13 law here and how that affects our revenue for, you know, lots and lots of things, but particularly education and how we might be able to either repeal or reform Prop 13 to something like the homestead tax exemption in Florida.
Louis Friedberg.
Well, the problem with Prop 13 is that it put limits on what school districts and local governments could do in terms of taxation. The state government takes the taxes and property taxes locally and kind of mushes it up and puts other money into it and then sends it back to the local district. So actually, Oakland has limited capacity. Every school district in the state has very limited capacity to raise their own funds. A recent poll came out that said that 78% of people in California still think Prop 13 is a good thing. So we are not going to see major reforms of Prop 13, other than now we have the split roll issue that's on the table. And I think there's a good chance that could pass, but again, with a lot of work.
And let me thank Leanne for the call. Some questions from listeners back to charter schools. I don't want to seem like we're giving charter schools too much of a black eye here, but Kay wants to know, does charter school funding come from the public school money pot, and are they not required to serve kids with special needs? Do they have nurses?
Well, I think some charter schools do have nurses. The thing is, there's excellent charter schools, and there are charter schools that are not doing well. There are excellent public schools, and there are public schools that are not doing well. So it's true. One can't...
But they do get funding.
They do get funding. They get this ADA, this Average Daily Attendance funds, and that's the money that goes to with every kid to the charter school.
And one of the arguments you hear is they don't serve enough special needs children or children who are, for example, in need of special tutoring and that sort of thing.
Well, that's true. That's true. The figures are that they do serve fewer special ed kids, and that's one of the reasons that districts like Oakland, one of the many reasons that they are struggling, because the special ed costs are so much higher.
There was an article in The Atlantic that said that made this argument, basically. I'll give you the synopsis of it, that there has to be a different way of framing from the unions and from those who are asking for higher salaries. They're doing it, I think, in Oakland, but it has to be, we need better schools, we need more counselors, we need more nurses, we need more help for the students, as opposed to the teachers need more money. Do you go along with that?
Well, I think that's been one of the positive things that's come out of this strike and Oakland strike, is that it has the issue that the conflict hasn't been around salaries predominantly, that they have been pushing for smaller class sizes, for more counselors, more school psychologists, more resource specialists, and I think more of a focus on the whole child. I think, and that is a shift. You'll remember that for many years, and No Child Left Behind, teachers were blamed for everything. They were supposed to take care of everything. I think there is now a recognition that there's a lot going on with a kid when he or she gets into the classroom that the teacher himself or herself can't take care of. They need help. And I think that's been one of the positive things. It's been impressive that the unions have made that a major, major focus.
I'm going to read a comment from Warren, who writes, California will not see any big and sustainable improvements in the public schools of poorer neighborhoods until all local funding of schools, including donations and parent fees, is prohibited. We'll get some more of your calls. Let's go to Oakland. Betty, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say one quick thing, that teachers have been saying for years now that teachers' working conditions are students' learning conditions. And I think that's really coming out in full force in the strike. Robert Reich yesterday said at the rally that the constant refrain that the money isn't there means they don't care. The state, the city, enormous wealth and resources, and yet they don't fully fund our schools. And one of the big frustrations is that in Oakland, we have 86 regular schools, district schools, and 44 charter schools, which drain our resources even further. So one of the things, I'm working with a group called Educators for Democratic Schools. It's an organization, mostly retired teachers and allies, And we're launching an online petition calling on our state legislators to enact a moratorium on new charters until there are some major changes made to the Charter Schools Act, which hasn't been changed essentially since 1992. So I want to give a an online place where people can go to sign this petition. It's at www.charterlawreform.com. And just another quick thing, there are some new bills that are coming up in the legislature. AB 1505 would end the charter appeal process, so you couldn't just, you know, deny a charter at a district level and then go on to the county and the state and have it approved. And then AB 1508, where districts can consider the fiscal impact of charters.
All right, Betty, I appreciate your call and thank you for it. Listener tweets, please discuss the role of the state trustee. Quote, a state-appointed official overseeing Oakland Unified's finances said, I don't know where this quote is from, that he would reject a 12% raise even if both sides agree to it?
Well, the trustee was imposed by the state after there was a state administrator that actually controlled the district where the board really wasn't operative. Then the district improved, so now they do have this trustee, and the trustee does have veto power over major budget decisions.
Do we know that that was stated as
yes.
quoted here?
That's what I saw. That was quoted. So I didn't talk to.
Well, it makes the seeking of 12% kind of futile if he has veto power.
Well, I think it's we're going to have to see what's agreed to at the bargaining table. But you know, one of the questions you have to ask is where was this person who was supposed to be overseeing the Oakland budget all these years that we end up in this situation?
Very good question. We'll get another caller on here, and that's Stephanie. Stephanie, go ahead, please.
Hi. I was just wondering if anyone had come up with sort of ideas about teacher-only housing, you know, in the community that they're supposed to teach in, some sort of unit of housing where all the teachers are in a piece of the district, you know, give them something that's affordable, something that's near the schools.
Yeah, it's an excellent question, Stephanie, but you're kind of fading out here on the call. But let me go to Louis Friedberg on this. I've heard this proposed before. How viable?
Well, some districts are trying to do that, but very expensive to build housing and on the scale that's needed. So I think it will help on the margins, but it's not a solution.
Well, good to have you here. I thank you. Louis Friedberg, again, is Executive Director of EdSource, an independent not-for-profit research and reporting organization. He's former editorial writer and columnist from the San Francisco Chronicle. And we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. We have another hour of Forum up ahead with a couple of important segments, which I think you will enjoy and learn from, which is the purpose that we are here for. Thank you for being here. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of the Minetti Schremm Museum of Art at UC Davis. On view through April 14th, Blue and Yellow Corridor, an iconic work by Bruce Nauman, realized on the very grounds where the artist conceived it.